Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
What is your ethnic background?
My ethnic background is Anglo-Saxon. Anglo-Saxon. We are from Ireland and Scotland and Germany.
Where's your mom's family from?
My mom's family is from Scotland and Ireland.
And where is your dad's family from?
His family is from Germany and England.
And then where are they from in the United States?
Aha, they are from... So when they moved over to the New World... They moved to my, I don't know about my dad's family, but my mom's family moved to Virginia, and then they moved to Tennessee, and then they moved to Indiana.
Have you ever been to their ancestral places?
I've been to Tennessee. To my great-grandma and grandma were Tennessee. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot Kentucky. They moved from Tennessee to Kentucky. And I've been to the family land in Kentucky. And I've been to Scotland, but I wasn't there for, and Germany, but I wasn't there for genealogical reasons.
What traditions have been passed down in your family?
Oh, we have good ones. Well, my grandma on my mom's side, so the Scotch Irish, Tennessee, Kentucky, Indiana people, they did throw a coin in the fountain, and we always did that when I was a little girl with my grandma. It was fun. I know we had a lot, but it's hard to do it, to come up with it off the top of my head. We made butter, homemade butter at Thanksgiving. My grandma would bring an old recipe, Tennessee, Kentucky, Southern sweet tea to Thanksgiving, and it was a concentrate. I mean, it was hardcore. And she'd bring this big old jar of this concentrate stuff, and then we would add water and ice when it was time to drink. Lots of recipes and pies and homemade noodles from Tennessee and Kentucky. Those are some things.
Do you remember any family songs?
Yeah, but I'm not gonna sing them.
I was hoping you would.
I'm a little embarrassed. Okay, so my grandma, like when it was bedtime, she would sing Mama's Little Baby Loves Shortening, that song. My mom made up lullaby songs, and she made them up from nursery rhyme books. So she would take nursery rhymes and put them to a tune and sing them to us at bedtime, which was fun. And we always sang that, what is it? Daddy's gonna buy you a mockingbird. That song. Hush Little Baby. That, my dad would sing that at bedtime.
Don't forget about Little Boy.
Actually, my mom put a Christopher Robin nursery rhyme thing from Winnie the Pooh. She put that to a tune, and she just invented that herself.
And can you think of any classic stories from your grandparents' time?
Do you mean like what stories they would tell me about themselves. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So my grandpa was, so I am, this is 2025. I am 52 years old. I was born in 1972, and I'm smack dab in the middle of Gen X. I'm just a middle of the road Gen X person. And so my parents are boomers and my grandparents were Greatest Generation. So my grandpa on my mom's side was World War II, and he had stories. He has a story of running out of his bunker buck naked because they thought they were getting bombed, or they had been bombed or something like that. He was working in the kitchen, I think, like in the mess hall kind of thing, and the stove messed up and it blew his toes off, and that was like the only injury he had from the war. He tells the story of being in the front pew of some church. So, you know, they basically were Tennessee, Kentucky, and then Midwest, Indiana people. And went, you know, had to go to church, Baptist sort of feel, Midwestern feel, small little churches. And when he was like maybe middle school aged, he sat in the front pew of one of these little churches and cut a piece of paper into a little tiny strip and folded it up into an accordion style and stuck it in his nose and slowly pulled it out while the preacher preached. So that's a good story. My grandma was really poor growing up in Kentucky and Indiana, and there were lots of kids. She had lots of siblings, and you know, I mean, they were poor enough that they had like dirt floors, but they were happy. There are a lot of happy stories, like lots of fun and games and songs and instrument playing. But it did make her sad to be poor. And when she was a teenager, she started working at, I know she was a soda jerk, and it was, you know, like a drugstore soda kind of place. And every day she would steal a candy bar and take it home and sneak it onto the windowsill of her little sister's bedroom. And so the little sister got to have a chocolate bar. And I don't know if it was truly every day, because it seems like she'd get caught, but she did it every now and then because they never got to have chocolate bars. So that makes it okay. Just kidding. No, it doesn't make it okay. But if you knew my grandma, you'd laugh because she was very mischievous, and I would compare her to Lucille Ball in I Love Lucy. Like, she was always getting into these mischievous, funny little situations and then trying to hide it. Even as a grandma, it was great. She was very fun because that's what she would do with us.
And how would she play with you?
Oh, yeah. She was very much a part of our lives. This is the wife of the guy that was in World War II. So she was also Greatest Generation. She lost lots of people in World War II. Very sad. But anyways, she was a big part of our life. I mean, she babysat us at least twice a week. And we had a blast. And she didn't just babysit us, she played with us. So she would get down on her hands and knees and pretend like she was a horse, and she would neigh, and she'd let us ride her back, you know, like a horse, and she would let us pretend like we were horses, and we could, like, she took a jump rope and hooked them up like they were reins. And I mean, we had so much fun. She played with us. And she would even rope my grandpa, the World War II vet, into playing Barbies with us. And he thought he was going to die. And he would always say, "Those lousy Barbie dolls." But then he would play for a little bit and pretend with them and make little voices. And she would read to us. And she'd, you know, it was old, you know, it was not politically correct did not exist. And she played cowboys and Indians with us. She played lots of, it was great.
And what was your neighborhood like when you were growing up?
Oh, it was great. So I lived in Indianapolis. I grew up in Indianapolis, and my parent, it was just middle class. And we lived in the suburbs, and it was, so I, you know, I remember the 70s, the mid to late, I remember. I have good memory from my childhood, and I remember from 4 years old on, so it was mid 70s. I remember, you know, lots of tricycles and bicycles out on the sidewalk, and then into the 80s, early 80s, it was great. We played outside all the time. We had freedom as we got older. You know, my mom would give us boundaries in the neighborhood as far as we could go, and we kept them. I didn't go past her boundaries really, and we just had the run of the neighborhood for all day, every day in the summer. And the kids, you know, in the neighborhood would get together and play. Lots of riding bikes, lots of pretending. We had woods behind our house, and we had clubhouses back there. We had a little creek going through there, and we would see like crawdads, and we had a little bridge, and we would see snakes back there and scream, and lots of, you know, drawing chalk on the driveway. And I had a pogo stick and a big wheel. My friend and I, we were kind of more like tomboys. So we were doing softball in the backyard and kickball and football. And it was really fun, super fun. I love to go back to that neighborhood and still see the houses where we played, and it was fun.
Can you remember one time when you got in trouble?
I can remember lots of times I got in trouble. I was, as a child, I was confident and stubborn and mischievous and imaginative. And those are, it's a wonderful mix of things and a horrible mix of things. So, oh my gosh. One time, I mean, there were so many times I got in trouble, but the first thing that pops in my head is when I put gum in my hair and just took scissors and chopped them out. So I had long, straight hair, and it was my cousin and me. Her name was Tara. And we got gum in my hair, and we didn't know what to do, so we just chopped it out with big scissors. And I thought my mom would never notice. So I just went home. And, you know, nobody said anything for a while, but she still, I mean, I was young enough that she still did my hair every day. So she started to do my hair and put it up in my little ponytail thingies, and just clumps and clumps and clumps of hair started coming out in her hands. And she freaked out at first because she thought something was really, really wrong. And then she figured it out. So that was one time I got in trouble, but
When you were young, what did you picture your future being like?
Oh my gosh. I was so ridiculous. So as a little kid, I didn't care. I mean, I was just having fun, and I just, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. But then as I got older, like into a teenager, I was more of a perfectionist. And I mean, gosh, I'm not sure I really had exact ideas of what I was going to do, but it was certainly going to be something really huge and world changing, which really didn't turn out.
And do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have an older sister. He was born in 1970, and we played a lot. And then there was me, 1972. And then I have a brother who was born in 77. So he was 5 years younger than me, but we still played a lot. Lots of fun memories there. And then around, let's see, 70, probably around 1984 or 85, my parents got a divorce. Very typical baby boomer situation. Huge, there's a huge statistic there, you know, in that generation. And they were definitely one of them. And then, so those are my like full biological siblings. And then my mom got remarried and had more kids. And so I have two baby siblings who are 16 and 18 years younger than me. They were born in 89 and 1991. And they were nothing but a blast for me because I was like teenager. I just carted them around and had so much fun with those babies. And then whenever it was like I was their auntie, you know. And then whenever it got hard, I just handed them over to mom, and that was the end of that. And we're still close to this day.
And how did you meet your husband?
We met, okay, so my husband was also born in 1972. We're about a month apart. And we met in seventh grade at Fulton Junior High School in Indianapolis in Mrs. Barger's English class in room 207. And we were 12 and we did not like each other when we first met. That's where we met, and that is not when we started dating.
And then how did you know that he was the one?
Oh, gosh. That's a hard question. So, we did not like each other. If you think about it, we were 12-year-olds, so we were complete screwballs. And he was totally squirrely, and we were just little kids. And then when we were 16, we were so much better than that. And we started to fall for each other. And we dated, like, you know, from 16 to 18, and then it was time to graduate from high school and go to college, and that was really heart-wrenching, but we didn't go to the same colleges. And probably through our freshman and sophomore years, let's see, he was at Purdue in Indiana, and I was at Indiana University. And by that time, I knew, boy, I just didn't want to be with anybody else for the rest of my life. And I did want to be with him for the rest of my life. Too much fun, too much awesomeness. So, and we've been married for 30 years. Well, just a couple months shy of 30 years now.
And what do you do for a living?
I'm a nurse. I got my BSN, and I've been an RN. Also, just a couple months shy of 30 years.
And do you like your job?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've done a million different nursing jobs in 30 years. Some of them I liked, some of them I hated. But I can tell you that, so I started in 1995, and now it's 2025, and I sure have seen a lot of changes. When I started, everything was paper and analog, and so much less rigid and so much less litigated. And those are the biggest. But then also, but the whole time I've been a nurse from 1995 on, we've been understaffed. It's horrible, but it's way worse now than it was. And of course, now we've gone through COVID. So healthcare is really in bad, 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 bad shape compared to 30 years ago.
What lessons has your work life taught you?
Oh, so many. I mean, I'll just try to pick one. It's ridiculous to try to pick the best one or name all of them, but I mean, it's definitely, you know, I've worked in ICU and really intensive jobs, and it's taught me, you know, I've faced a lot of death, so I realize now I'm so different in compared to most of my peers out in the world, different people my age and people who are not in healthcare. I have a really different insight into death, and I, you know, facing death and coming to peace with death and seeing death. I don't know. I think it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing to have faced it the way I have. That's definitely a different lesson than what a lot of people get. It's also taught me that there are wonderful people in this world who, despite their demographics, so rich people, poor people, you know, healthy people, unhealthy people, men, women, children, adults, all of it. Like, I've just seen some of the best in people, and I've seen some of the worst in people too, differently than what I think someone who wasn't in healthcare would have experienced. I've grown to really love and appreciate and love to listen to people who are kind of the salt of the earth. They don't necessarily have a lot of money, but they sure have a lot of wisdom, and I've loved that. And I have other demographics I don't like as well. I really do.
And if you could do anything now, what would you do? And why?
I mean, I'm 52, and I'm getting tired of work, you know. So one thing we did a few years ago was I went part-time instead of full-time. And especially in healthcare and the way it is now, that's a life changer and a lifesaver, to be honest with you. So that was a huge thing that I needed to do, and I'm glad I did it. And I would not change that. I don't know. I'm pretty content and pretty happy, to be honest, and very grateful for that. So it's not like I'm sitting around longing for something else.
How would you like to be remembered?
This is the honest truth. I hope that I'm remembered authentically, like without, you know, that people remember how I really was. But I kind of don't care. Like, maybe because I've had to face death more than the typical person, but I realize that in 100 years, no one will be alive that even knew me. And I'm okay with that. I know that I've affected people's lives, and that will trickle down to their children, and that will trickle down to their children. Like, all of us make a difference forever, I think. So I don't care. I don't care if I'm remembered. I don't care if I'm not remembered. I've left my footprint for good or bad.
Thank you.